You're listening to Listen Up with James Potts and co-hosts Jamal Potts and Zaylor Stout, only on LA Talk Radio.
Alrighty, Zaylor and Jamal back on the air. And as always, thank you so much for spending your Sunday afternoon or your Sunday evening with us. We really do appreciate it. Hey guys, sing out.
Hey, happy Sunday, everybody.
Hey, happy Sunday, everyone.
All right. So we got some good news on the home front here. The Washington Redskins blew up the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. So that's some good news. And Minnesota, I think, is playing. We always talk about our teams. And I think, Jamal, did your team win last? No, you had a bye.
Yeah, you had a bye this week, man.
No, you had a bye this week. Zella, how's your team doing down there? Or do you know? Not sure?
Yep, 13-10. They're up.
Hey, man, can you be honest about your team, man? They nameless. The only NFL team without a name.
Who?
Your team, the only nameless team.
We got a name. Huh? We got a name.
Yeah, okay.
The Washington football team.
Yeah.
How dry is that?
Hey, man. Only your team.
It's all political, man. It was all political. What can I say? But whatever, man. I don't care. You know, it is what it is. The name is the name. You know, it depends on how these guys are winning, not winning, whatever the heck the case may be. Hey, at any rate, today we're going to be talking about the highly controversial Kyle Rittenhouse trial. And we decided to have some fun with this, with everybody taking a basic role here. I'm going to talk about the judge because the judge has been somewhat under fire about his role in this and things he's doing, which I don't understand. But, you know, whatever the case may be. So I'll be going into the judge, talking about the judge a little bit. And then Zaylor is going to present the prosecution side on this. And then Jamal is going to talk about the defense side of this a bit as well. So we're going to cover it, and because people are asking about it, about what we think. So we get these emails about this case and what we think and how we feel about it and all that good stuff. And I think pretty much we'll probably be, at the end of the show, all be on the same page what the outcome might possibly be. This is being submitted to the jury tomorrow, so we'll see about that. And I don't want to say which one of us will be right, because I don't think it's a question of that. I think we might be all on the same page, but hey, you never know with these things. Okay, before we get too far into this, Jamal, the show wouldn't be the show without you having some blast. You got some blast this week for us, or what?
Yeah, man, I forgot the guy's name, but of course he's in the great state of Florida, man. I just want to put the guy on blast, man, who called 911 to ask them.
Go ahead. I think I noticed him. Go ahead.
I don't know if I can say the word, but he called 911 to ask where are the ladies of the night at.
Oh no, that's not what I was talking about.
Yeah,
there was one that.
And he was arrested for that.
Well,
for wasting,
soliciting.
No, soliciting for wasting. Yeah, for wasting 911 operator's time, emergency. What you call his time?
Mm-hmm.
You don't call 911 and ask.
We got our first comment. Stop hating on Florida, Jamal.
Jamal,
did you hear about the guy that got stuck in the wall?
People were in Florida.
I'm not sure where it was. We say it was in Florida, yeah. At any rate, this guy got stuck. Somehow or another, he got stuck inside of a building, a wall that was working. And he got stuck in this wall for 3 days. And he was pounding. So finally, somebody called 911 because the guy, they heard voices. And, heard a voice of somebody screaming. They had to come there and break the wall down. Somehow or another, this guy had been trapped inside for 3 days or something. That's the one I thought you were getting ready to talk about. So, at any rate, yeah, well, that's a case of dumb there.
Yeah.
You're
leaving us on the edge, man. Like, well, how did he get stuck in the wall?
Because he was working, and somehow or another they put the wall up. They had locked up for the night or something like that. It was something like that. It was something really crazy.
So it wasn't like he was trying to break in.
Literally, he was beating. He was beating on the wall for 3 days or whatever it was. Finally, somebody heard him, some passerby or something, and they ended up calling 911, and they had to go in there and break some wall down to get this guy out or something. It was really weird. I just thought that was, I mean, I didn't do a lot with it, but I'm just saying I thought that was what you were getting ready to talk about when you said 911. You know. So anyway, let's get on to these emails so we can get on to the main part of this, you know, so we don't keep our listeners on the edge of their seats, so to speak. Jim, with everything going on in the news about the Rittenhouse case, the Ahmaud Arbery case isn't getting much attention. A black man getting killed by three white men seems more newsworthy than one white guy killing two white guys and wounding another. Why do you think there's such a difference? And that's from Annette from Lake Charles, Louisiana. You know, I can't explain what the media does and what they don't do. You know, that case is a highly controversial case also. I know that the judge is not happy. I think we mentioned this on the show. The judge was not happy with the selection of the jury. So while they're doing that, what was on the news this week, there was a piece on the news this week about the fact that the defense counsel asked that black pastors not be sitting in the audience, so to speak, because of the fact that they feel that they would be intimidating the jury. So, you know, Al Sharpton was there, Mr. Opportunist, as far as I'm concerned. And they get paid for that stuff, by the way. They don't do that stuff for free. But anyway, so he was there. So now he's gonna gather other black pastors that are going to be outside the courthouse or something with some kind of protest going on. Defense counsel took it back and apologized. So I don't know why there's not more coverage on it. You know, with the Rittenhouse case, I mean, that really has consumed the news. And you guys have any feedback on that? Anything you've heard?
Yeah, I hate BS apologies, man. Why is he apologizing? If that's the way you feel, that's the way you feel. Stand on all 10 toes. You know what I mean? But, you know, hey, we need Jesus in the courthouse. You know what I mean? I'm all for the pastors being in there. Sound good to me?
The rationale is that they feel that the pastors, Jamal, can be inflammatory in their churches. So if the verdict doesn't come out the way they want, then that could influence people to get upset and things. That was the logic, so to speak.
People going to get upset regardless. You know what I'm saying? If they don't like the outcome, you know.
That's just how it works. You know, Zella, I don't know. Do you have anything to add to that?
Yeah, I'm not sure having them present makes any difference or any change. They're supposed to be there to provide at least their position, you know, a spiritual support to the families that are going through a challenging time. It can't be easy to hear all these details in regards to how their family members were killed. So,
but they actually showed the graphic photos of the body of Mr. Arbery as well. So I agree with you. You know, I don't think that's a big deal, but like I said, the defense did it, said it, who knows? They don't want, they're trying to get their clients off, so, you know, any angle they think they can use, I guess. But we'll see how it turns out. I mean, from what I know about that case, to answer you, Annette, I don't know why the media is doing what they're doing. They could look at it like this is a slam dunk situation, so it's not a big deal to cover. We'll wait and see what happens. I mean, I think they're going to get convicted, so we'll wait and see.
Jamal? Once again, let me just point out one of our country's biggest hypocrisies. I don't know how it always works out this way. Now, there's a lot of people who, you know, who said Kyle Rittenhouse self-defense. I agree.
I don't want to get into the Kyle Rittenhouse case yet.
Can you go ahead?
No. I'm sorry, Jamal. I'm just cutting you off not to go deep in it. It's just a comment you want to make. Go ahead. But I don't want to get deep into that yet because we haven't gotten there.
I'm not. Just pointing out the hypocrisy of the country. Okay. Anyway, this is self-defense and people saying poor Kyle self-defense, yada, yada, yada. However, people don't have that same energy that a self-defense going back to January 6th when a security guard shot somebody that kept coming. That's amazing to me. I mean, it's not surprising, you know what I mean? That guy don't get the same kind of support as Kyle Rittenhouse in his self-defense, and he was actually protecting Congress. But I don't know. Going for it.
We're not there yet on Kyle Rittenhouse. But at any rate, we got a comment. Isn't there only one person of color on the jury? And the answer to that is yes. And that's what the judges saw. The judge was upset about it, but his hands are tied. The defense on that case, with the Arbery case, did a masterful job. Zella will tell you the way voir dire works, you know, and each side gets the ability to excuse a juror. So if you got 30 jurors there, you know, X number, you know, each side gets X numbers of opportunities to be able to excuse a juror. So somehow or another, they did a, you know, they did, that's how it ended up. I mean, the judge was not happy about it. And you have to be careful about that, because that could be a situation that actually causes there to be a mistrial because of the fact that the jury is so slanted. So we'll just have to wait and see. If these guys get convicted, no issue about the jury. If it doesn't get, if they don't get convicted, watch. It's going to be an issue about the jury. We got another comment. We live in a society where a black man can be allegedly killed for jogging in the wrong part of Georgia, and the white man charged in his murder and facing nearly all white jury, while a white teen armed for war can be hailed by many people as a hero. Okay. You know, so, you know, again, you know, this is what this stuff is. I mean, it's, everybody's got opinions about this. Both of these trials are highly emotional. There's just no two ways about it. So we'll just have to wait and see about the income. But to the last person that just sent something in, we're going to go through the facts of this. What people don't understand is that in these types of trials is that there are facts that come out that you ordinarily don't see, don't hear, you know, and we'll cover some of that in here as well. There's nothing like being in a courtroom from beginning to end and hearing everything, which a jury gets to do. People outside of the courtroom, they don't get to hear everything. So right away, if there's a verdict that they don't like, and they're operating on emotions and not the facts of the case. So it is what it is. We'll have to wait and see.
Can I add something to that,
Jim?
I mean, the other part is that, you know, cases are won and lost based on the evidence that you're able to get or not get in front of a jury. And so that's the other part where we have access to additional information and evidence that the jury may not necessarily have access to because of rulings that the judge made as it relates to that. So those are also factors that come into effect in regard to these things.
Yeah, no, absolutely. You know, hey, my personal opinion is I don't think these guys should get off. Any issue about this other person talking about, he's being hailed as a hero. I'm not sure I've seen that he's being hailed as a hero.
Oh, yes. He is.
Okay, whatever, mm-hmm. You know, because of what the reason why he was there and everything like that, too. So I'm not going to ever justify somebody taking, you know, as a former police officer, anybody taking, you know, things into their own hand. We'll get into the Rittenhouse situation, mm-hmm. and voice some opinions. But let's get to the second email real quick, because we're going to have enough to talk about with the Rittenhouse situation. Jim, whatever inspired Joe Biden to pick up Kamala Harris as a VP? She is terrible and her ratings are down to 28, which is the worst for any vice president. Do you think she could possibly get the nomination for president in 2024? And that's from Shelley from Seattle, Washington. Shelley, I don't have a crystal ball. You know, everybody's got their opinions about these VPs and things of that nature. You hear things, you look at these polls. You know, when the polls come out, when they're good for somebody, they praise the polls. When the polls come out low for somebody, hey, we don't look at polls. So, I mean, it is what it is. Do I think personally she should get the nomination or could get it? I don't personally think so. I don't think she's qualified to be president. I didn't think she was qualified to be vice president. But if Joe Biden, you know, if Joe Biden wanted her, that's his choice for whatever reason he picked her. So I stand by the choice if that's what he wants. Okay. That's not for us to determine, in my opinion. Somebody just typed in and said Biden should have picked Susan Rice for VP. Well, I think Susan Rice, quite frankly, would be more popular, not more popular, is more qualified is the word I'm looking for, than Kamala Harris. I mean, Susan Rice, I mean, she's got a whole lot of experience, and she was 8 years under the Obama administration. She did a lot of things, you know, and it's not a question whether you agree or disagree with everything, because everything they do, we're not going to necessarily agree with. But she certainly was more qualified. And the only reason, in my opinion, why Kamala Harris got picked by Biden is because she was very close to his son. And he's always talking about his son. Every scenario he gives, he talks about his son. So he felt very close. And I think as a parent, he was still very distraught about the loss of his child, which I get that. You know, so maybe, you know, the emotions played a part of that. And then Kamala Harris was also liked by President Obama. So Who knows behind the scenes why they did what they did? But that's his choice is what I'll say. Zeller, any thoughts?
It's all strategy. And, you know, America elected somebody that had no experience at all. So So there's folks that have and didn't elect somebody as president that had more experience than almost anybody. So it is what it is. Elections have consequences. They pick who they want to pick. Sometimes it works. Sometimes it doesn't.
Yeah. Well, that's true, because Obama didn't have that much experience when he was president. But I will say that I didn't agree with all of his policies, but I don't think he did a horrible job while he was in office. I think he had 2 years in the Senate when he got elected. So at least that was some experience. The last president had absolutely zero political experience in terms of being a congressman or a senator or whatever. So obviously there's different people that feel different ways about that one. Jamal, you got anything?
No.
All right. Let's keep moving. Jim, Biden is totally incompetent. He misleads the American people every time he opens his mouth. He claims the economy is doing well when gas prices, food, gas for our homes, and even buying cars is so astronomically high. It is shameful. If we get slammed at the midterms, he will be a major factor. And that's from Frank from Cincinnati, Ohio. Sounds like he's a Democrat and he's not happy, but whatever. I don't know who to blame the economy on. Some people say it's a flow from the last administration, whatever the case may be. I just know. I mean, I went to go fill up one of our vehicles yesterday. You know, just on regular gas, 18 gallons cost me $93. I mean, people, when it comes to filling up their tanks or buying food, they ain't thinking about anything other than why is it costing so much. I mean, that kind of crosses party lines. $93 for a tank full of gas is $93 for a tank full of gas. And when somebody goes to the poll later on, they're not going to be thinking, oh, it flowed over from the other administration. They're going to be looking at it like, why is it costing me $93? You know, food prices are up and things of that nature. So, you know, the midterm elections are going to be the midterm elections. You know, that's still a year away, as they say. And as one of our listeners said last week, you know, anything could happen between now and then. Jamal, I'll let you weigh in first and then come to Zeller.
Hey, I know we get a lot of our oil imported from overseas. Just kind of curious. How does this work? Is our, because I know we have a lot of problems at the docks and stuff like that. So do we have a lot of oil still floating around out there in the ocean? Or do they get an express line to hurry and get these gas, the gas in here? How does that work?
Well, wait a minute. First of all, under the last administration, we didn't have this issue because we were using our own oil and things of that nature. We had our own. Now is what's going on. We're being controlled by OPEC. It's not a secret. Biden has actually asked OPEC and Russia and all of them to, you know, to pump more gas, and they're telling him no. Okay, so in my opinion, they're squeezing him. There's nothing he can do about it because he came on board after saying when he was running for office what he wasn't going to do, and he did the opposite when he came in regarding the oil here. But in fairness to him, he had people that he had to cater to regarding all of this, and the AOC people and the Bernie people. So, you know, to me, he kind of got himself caught up with that, but it is what it is. You know, so we just have to wait it out and see what's going to happen. Now, if you're talking about what oil is offshore, Jamal, it's not like that. You're thinking about this backup because of supplies and things of that nature. That has nothing to do with that. Not to my knowledge. Zella, what do you think? I don't think it has to do with that, Jamal. It's another issue.
Right. I was just wondering.
Well, the pandemic has a lot to do with the increase in regards to prices of goods and services. The other part is that if you're tracking, I guess it depends on which economist you're tracking. The economists that I'm tracking are indicating that the U.S. economy has switched significantly from a service-focused economy with people spending a lot of money on services to a goods economy, which is different because if our increases in regards to what we're purchasing has gone up 50-60% from what it was before, that and again, restaurants and bars and theaters and all those places were closed for a significant period of time, that makes a huge difference. And that's where a lot of that backlog has been coming from.
You know, we turn around and again, everybody's got an opinion. You talk to one economist is one thing, one economist is something else. You know, we're just, you know, American citizens, in my opinion, we're just a little pawns that are back and forth and hoping that what the people are telling us is right. And these people have their different opinions. So we're slapped back and forth. So everybody wants to argue that their economist is the right one and the other one's the wrong one. So who knows? The reality is, I don't care why. The reality is, like I said, I fill up $93, okay, on a car that takes regular gas. When I fill up our cars to take the high test, you know, I mean, those two cars, it's over 100. It's well over $100. I mean, I don't care the reason why. It's still over $100. And being in California, it's even worse. It's just that simple. So whatever needs to be done, it needs to be worked out. And whoever's in the Oval Office right now, under these types of circumstances, the fingers are always going to be pointed because they're the person out there, whether it's their fault or not. Is the way the voters work. That's just the way it is.
I agree with that.
And it's cars. We went out today. You know, gas today in California, $5.30 a gallon. I mean, that's just totally insane. I don't care how you cut it. Yeah. You know, we went out to go look at some cars today, some new cars. And let me tell you something. They're putting $6,000 to $10,000 on top of the manufacturer's retail price, the MSRP. They're putting that much. They told us. We were there looking, and they told us. I said, why is this so high? Because, you know, what's on the sticker price? No. You got to think about it. It's going to be $6,000 to $10,000 higher than that. We went to one car lot to look at these three vehicles. They had one of each vehicle on the lot. I kid you not. And they said, well, you can look at it. You can decide which one you want. But it'll probably be 2 to 3 months before you can get it. I, you know.
Okay, and so the reason why? What's your assessment in regards to the reason why?
That's to back up with the supply. I don't disagree with that. All that stuff is offshore, so it's not being manufactured. The pandemic probably did impact that because we get a lot of those cars from overseas.
And or parts. I mean, this is...
Exactly.
This is what America decided, and the global economies, industrial countries decided that they wanted to do, was focus on this just-in-time inventory, where they purchase the products from the cheapest place around the world and have it shipped over here. And these are the ramifications when that happens, when there's a global pandemic.
Well, you know what, Zeller? I don't think it's just a global pandemic. I think that's what sparked it, okay? Because under the Trump administration, he was saying, buy things right here. So it was a different scenario. But now they're learning.
Your president, as usual,
you're cutting me off after I listen to you. Will you at least let me finish? Okay. Yeah. So the point of the story is one of the things that he was pushing was that, you know, have things manufactured here. It's like our antibiotics. Our antibiotics, 90% of them are done in China. And I do agree with you, Zella, on the fact that, you know, the American businesses always look to do it the cheapest route. I get it. Okay. And now this is an example of how we're hurting. So you know what I hope? I hope that American businesses have learned their lesson. But you know what? They probably won't. Okay. And they'll continue to let us be dependent on getting these different parts and all the things we're talking about here, you know, from overseas. We got a couple of other comments. $3.25 for gas there. One dealership here had 10 cars on the lot. That should have 300. It was on the news. Crazy. Anyway, Jamal, what's your opinion?
No, on this one, man, I don't know. We definitely got to get our economy back rolling. It don't seem like American businesses. You can't claim you're patriotic, yet you're selling our products over to China for China to resell the stuff back to us. And that kind of stuff just doesn't make sense, and we got to improve on that. And I do blame whoever's in charge, whoever's in the office, they get the blame for it. You know what I mean? So hopefully... That's not to say they can't fix it. I hope they do fix it. I hope they make it a priority.
Well, you know, each administration takes credit when everything is going right. True. You know, and then they push it back when everything is going. Every administration does that. So we get that part of it. Let's get on to this Rittenhouse thing. Oh, I'm sorry, Zella, you had a comment. What was your comment?
No, I'm good. Let's move on.
Right. Because it wasn't a value anyway from what I could hear when they were talking over me. But let's go on. At any rate, look, the whole... This whole thing with the Kyle Rittenhouse case, hey, we're going to have fun with this, you know, up until the end, so to speak, with these difference of opinions. The Kyle Rittenhouse case is taking the reason why the Kyle, and this goes back to what the person was asking earlier. The Kyle Rittenhouse case is actually being televised. All right. So people have an opportunity. I know Jamal has spent some time actually looking at it, you know, as well. I've caught bits and pieces of it. Don't know how much Zell has caught on it with the trial. Well, wait a minute. Is Wisconsin an open carry state? I asked because a number of police officers drove by Kyle Rittenhouse carrying his weapon openly, and they did nothing. Okay. We'll talk about that in a minute. But at any rate, so that's why I think some of that, you know, is it's more in the news because you actually get listen to everything. Reminds me of the O.J. Simpson trial. You know, I watched a lot of that. And you actually get to hear things, see things, and things of that nature. So in this particular case, this judge is being blasted, if nothing else, by the liberal media, because I've tried to watch it on both stations to see what everybody's talking about. So they're talking about he's crazy and this and that. This judge is 75 years old. He's Wisconsin's longest serving circuit judge. And over the years, he has developed a reputation of being a tough jurist. Now, I will tell you, the other research determined that normally he's harder on the defense than he is on the prosecution side. This side, it appears that he's the opposite. But he has a reputation for doing what he believes is the right thing and being an independent thinker. Now, part of the controversy is that before the trial, the judge ruled that the men shot by Rittenhouse cannot be referred to as victims by the prosecutors. Defense attorneys may, however, call them arsonists or looters if they could justify those labels. Prosecutors argued that the judge was establishing a double standard. Look, they got killed. He's a defendant in the case, and I don't know. I mean, I guess he's determining if it's a self-defense issue because it may sway the jury, so you can't refer to them as victims if it was self-defense. Take it for what it's worth, you know. Now, I'm going to stop there, give you a little bit of background on him, and I'm going to come back to some of the things that created some of the controversy as well. So I think it's important for us to understand what he was charged with as well. So Zeller, on behalf of the prosecution, so to speak, is going to lay it out for us in terms of the charges that are against him, that the jury is going to be considering starting tomorrow. Go ahead, Zeller.
Yep, so there's seven charges. So there's first-degree reckless homicide, use of a deadly weapon or dangerous weapon, and this is a felony charge. And this was based on the death of Joseph Rosenbaum, and this was the first man that was shot by Rittenhouse, who threw a plastic bag at him and was chasing him through the parking lot. There was video evidence introduced at trial that showed Rittenhouse wheeling around and firing at Rosenbaum, who was chasing him. There was a witness that also testified at trial that Rosenbaum lunged for Rittenhouse's gun. There's also the request that, other lower charges also be included in regard to this one. So that would be, that's right. So we have to be able to, in order to be able to win on that charge, you have to be able to show that he intended to murder Rosenbaum. Without regard for life. And there could be additional 5 years that's added on top of that because of the weapons modifier, the lesser charges that are being put forward as well, or at least there's a request to the judge to put those forward, include second degree reckless homicide, where there wouldn't have to be approving that there was an utter disregard for human life, and that's punishable of up to 25 years.
And the first one, just to be clear, is punishable by 60 years. Mm-hmm. So you can see that there's a big difference in the amount of time, depending on which one of these, you know, if the jury finds for either one of these. Go ahead, Zeller.
I'll try to go quicker. Second charge is first degree reckless endangering safety while using a dangerous weapon. Again, this is a felony, and this is in regards to his shooting of McGinnis. And this is a 12 and a half years of imprisonment, possibly with a 5-year modifier based on the use of a weapon. The lesser charges that are proposed to be brought forward is the second degree version of this charge. Again, we wouldn't have to prove that there was an utter disregard for human life in his use of this weapon at this time. And that would be a 10-year prison sentence instead of the 12 and a half years prison sentence. Third charge, first degree reckless endangering and safety, and this one is in regards to the two rounds that were shot at another man, and so that's along the same lines as what was outlined just a moment ago. There's a fourth charge, which is first degree intentional homicide, and this is in connection with the death of Hubers. And so with this one, you have to be able to prove that he meant to kill the person. There's a mandatory life sentence in regards to this. The lesser charges that are being requested and being brought forward would lower that to just a imminent danger and grave bodily injury, and the whole issue rests on whether there was a belief, whether Rittenhouse's belief was reasonable under the circumstances.
But you know what's funny about that one, Sailor, is that that comes with a mandatory life sentence, but the modifier adds 5 years. Well, wait a minute.
Everyone, life sentence. But then life sentences aren't always all life. Yeah. You know that more than anybody.
Well, that is true. But when we first read that,
yeah,
like life sentence plus 5 years, it's like, okay, wait a minute.
Exactly.
But that's true. You can get a life sentence and get out and parole, because that is not without the possibility of parole. But like I said, when you first read it, it looks kind of, wait a second.
It reads weird. Count 5, attempted first degree intentional homicide. And so this is the shooting of Gage Grosskurtz, where he got shot in the arm. And this is what somebody that was coming towards him holding a pistol. Maximum 60 years on this one with a 5-year modifier. The lesser charges would be second degree attempted intentional homicide or first degree reckless endangerment and second degree reckless endangerment. And so those would be up to 30 years in prison. And then the seventh count is failure to comply with, actually, you know what? Sorry, there was another one. Sixth count is possession of a dangerous weapon by a person under the age of 18. I think this gets to the question that one of our comments came in. So Rittenhouse had an AR-style semi-automatic rifle, and he was 17 at the time that the shooting occurred. Wisconsin law prohibits minors from possessing firearms except for hunting. And so this would be up to 9 months in prison. And then the seventh count was one that was actually thrown out by the judge early on, and this was failure to comply with an emergency order or state from a state or local government, and this is being out after curfew. It would have been a $200 fine.
Well, let's start with that one. That one was kind of humorous to me. So with all of those looters and all those people out there rioting and doing all the stuff that they were doing, I haven't heard one of them being brought up on charges. So they're going to throw this charge in on this guy for being there. What about the other 2,000 or 3,000 people that were out there?
So quick question. Did you look to see and make sure that nobody was arrested in regards to looting?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Zero.
Interesting.
Right. Can't say zero because he was one of them.
Well, but he was arrested for the murder first. This came in afterwards. But look, let me just tell you something. I want to mention something else. The misdemeanor charge, you said 9 months. It wouldn't be prison if it's only 9 months. He's probably going to, that would probably be the county as opposed to throwing him in prison. And if it is for that misdemeanor charge and he's got no other prior record, that he's not going to jail. He'll get probation. So I just wanted to take care of those last two before we get into some of these other ones. Because I know Jamal is going to present, the defense side of this. And, let's talk about some of the things. And before I forget, by the way, the judge in this case, he was appointed to the bench in 1983. I forgot to mention this. He was by a Democrat, actually. The governor at that time, his name was Tony Earle, and he was a Democrat to put him in there. And then after that, he's elected every 6 years into that position. So the people there locally, or whoever gets to vote on the federal judges, they can't be that dissatisfied with him because he gets elected every 6 years. So I just want to point that out.
I got a question, which with the expertise of your law enforcement background, is it police procedure to not ask 10 armed guys with AR-15s for their IDs and to see if they're permitted to carry?
Now wait a minute. First of all, you're talking about different jurisdictions have different rules, Jamal. Okay, that's the first thing. Are you talking about because of the night of Kenosha? Are you talking about specifically Kenosha?
Yeah, because the police was out there talking to him. It just seems like it would be policy and maybe even common sense to just ask, do you guys have your IDs to make sure that they're carrying legally?
Just to be clear, the Kenosha police, okay, and you guys can Google this, were told to stand down. That's why they didn't get involved in anything, Jamal. So they were not asking people for anything. They were literally just on standby. They were told to stand down. We got a comment that came in and said, why hasn't Rittenhouse's mother been charged as an accessory?
That's my second question. Or child endangerment.
who knows? Okay, you know, she's not going to be at the top of the news about child endangerment and whether she's going to be an accessory to what? If he turns around, you can't charge her as an accessory if they haven't determined whether or not he's guilty. If the plea goes, if it comes back, if the verdict comes back that he's not guilty, then you can't charge him as a, you can't charge her as an accessory
or child endangerment.
Well, again, child endangerment is going to be by jurisdiction whether or not they're going to determine that that's child endangerment because she drove her son there. You know, that's a misdemeanor at best. They ain't worrying about her. You know, so I don't think that's going to go anywhere. But again, you know, the accessory. You know, there's different times of types of accessory. There's accessory before the fact, accessory after the fact. You know, it's all of those things. So, if right now, if he's not if he's not convicted of anything, you can't hold her as an accessory. And I doubt seriously if he is convicted that they would bring some charge against her for being an accessory for driving him there. And I heard her interview. Her interview was that, yeah, you know, he's always been the type of person that wants to help people, things of that nature. It actually came out that he assisted people. He did a lot of things. Jamal, you watched some of this.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know if you saw the mother's interview or not.
No, he absolutely. He was out there giving first aid.
Right. So
to everybody except for the ones he shot.
Well, you know, I get that part, you know, but whatever, you know. He kind of shot them in the heat of battle, so I don't know that you're going to have time to stop to give somebody first aid when you got people chasing you. But in terms of the other people, this is all before the shooting that he stopped to help people, and that was why he wanted to go there, supposedly. I don't, you know, since we're just giving an opinion now before we get into the defense of this, personally, I don't know why. I mean, I understand some people call him a wannabe cop and all of that. Look, there's a lot of wannabe cops out there. There's no doubt about that. I mean, we encounter those with, you know, when you're on patrol and people that want to jump in the middle of everything. And, you know, it's like that guy. Somebody just said the heat of battle. Well, yeah, I call that a battle. If you got people chasing you and all that stuff that's going on. So I use the expression heat of battle, meaning that there was a lot going on. He felt his life was in danger. He's not going to turn around and stop and, you know, and shoot somebody. Let me give them first aid while these people are chasing him. But what was the guy that was in Florida? I can't think of his name. That shot the guy because he was on watch patrol or whatever that was.
Zimmerman. No, he shot the kid. George Zimmerman.
Yeah, George Zimmerman. To me, he was a wannabe. So there's people out there that are just like that. Law enforcement encounters those kind of people all the time. I don't agree. To me, he should not have been there. Okay, period. That was poor judgment on his part, in my opinion, and on his mother's part. But that doesn't mean he's guilty of murder. He's guilty of poor judgment, and his mother's guilty of poor judgment. I would not have driven my son, and he wanted to go there in the middle of that crap, quite frankly, and say, I want to go down there. No, we're not going down there. You know, Jamal, you remember when the L.A. riots, remember? Right. What did I say? You know, hey, no, we're not participating. We're not doing any of that stuff, you know. So, Jamal, there's a defense side to this. So why don't you share, you know, and I know that you watched a lot of this as well. Why don't you share the defense side?
Their argument, of course, is that it's self-defense. In the case of the situation with Rosenbaum, which was the first deceased person, I use that word.
What Jamal's doing? Do your defense, Jamal.
The first deceased person in this event, he was allegedly, Kyle Rittenhouse said that the guy had earlier threatened to kill him multiple times, and then there ended up being like another incident with this person where he felt like the guy was charging towards him. He was running away from him in between cars. He stopped running at one point, turned around. He felt threatened and shot the guy, and then continued to keep running between the cars. And after that happened, there were people yelling, hey, he shot somebody. Y'all go get him.
Y'all go get him, right.
Yeah. Why you want to chase a man with an AR-15?
Exactly. That's what I said, Jamal. He told the other people, y'all go get him, right?
Yeah. So he's running down, and people are yelling that he shot somebody. The second deceased person in this event hit him in the head with the skateboard as he was running, not once, not twice. And in the midst of the second time striking Mr. Rittenhouse, Mr. Rittenhouse shot him. And from, I think, the downward position, he was on the ground. And then the third person actually stood over him with a weapon. And once again, Mr. Rittenhouse felt threatened and shot that guy and wounded him.
Okay, wait a minute. Let's be clear. That is also the witness who testified that he pointed the gun, not just standing over him, he pointed the gun at Rittenhouse. And he said, Rittenhouse, this is his testimony. Rittenhouse, he said, did not fire the gun, his gun, Rittenhouse's gun, until he had pointed the weapon at him. So when he pointed the weapon at Rittenhouse, that's when Rittenhouse shot him. And this is his testimony. And he was a witness for the prosecution. That did not go well.
Right. I said he stood over him with the gun. He felt threatened and shot him. That's what I said.
I just want to make sure that we understand about the pointing, Jamal, because he could have had a gun at his side. I'm just being clear on that.
I think the biggest incident, now taking away from the defense part for a second, stepping out of that, the biggest thing that we needed to find out was, did the first deceased person actually attack Mr. Rittenhouse? But we're not allowed to see that. They will not allow clear evidence to be shown so we can get a better view of if it was actually...
Now, what do you mean by that?
Well, there was an incident where the prosecution wanted to zoom in. The defense did a great job of trumping up something and saying, hey, the pixels will show an image that is not actually there and what they think is there, so that may not be what it is. However, some other pictures from Walgreens was there that was blown up and allowed to be introduced to the court. So therefore, if we can't clearly see, because there was an issue, did the first deceased person grab the barrel of the gun? Because that was a defense argument. But once again, we're not allowed to see that.
Okay, hold on 1 second, because I have information on that. And here's what it was. The judge sympathized with the defense team after Rittenhouse's lawyer suggested Apple's pinch to zoom feature on tablets and phones can distort video evidence. The company's iPads have artificial intelligence in them that allows things to be viewed through three dimensions and logarithms, the defense team argued. This isn't exactly enhanced video. This is Apple's iPad programming, creating what it thinks is there, not what is necessarily there. The judge responded that the prosecution shouldered the burden of proof that Apple does not use artificial intelligence to manipulate the footage. Okay, the judge further said, you're the proponent of the exhibit. You need to tell me that it's reliable. And Zayla, you know, in our evidence classes, what do they talk about? Reliability of evidence is a big thing. So all the judge said, he suggested that the prosecutors find an expert during their recess, saying maybe you can get someone to testify on this, okay? To get somebody to testify on it, because if the objection was raised, the burden is still going to be on the prosecution if they're submitting the evidence, okay? Since the defense brought up that, wait a minute, the way that these things work is not that clear. So that's why the burden was on them to get an expert in to say, no, this is not what it is. The prosecution suggested that the defense should get that. The defense doesn't have to get that. It's your evidence. Since it's your evidence, then therefore you're the one that has to show the reliability on it, not the defense, because you have the burden of proof, not the defendants. Now, Zeller, you took that. You took evidence. You tell me.
Yeah. So the request from the defense, the request from the prosecutors was to take judicial notice that you know, if it's midnight, it's going to be dark. And it was dark out if it was midnight. And there's some basics in regards to technology that I think that isn't always necessarily available and translated to certain individuals that are on the bench that haven't perhaps used that technology their entire life. And that's pretty much what this particular issue has brought forward.
Oh, okay. So you're talking about because of his age and technology, he may not have a good understanding of it. That to me is even more so why the judge is saying, okay, because he doesn't fully understand it. And Zayla, you know, judges don't always fully understand everything. That's the purpose. I mean, you guys know I'm an expert witness in cases. And what's the purpose of that? Is to be able to go in there, to be able to let the judge know and the jury know, okay, exactly, you know, with an expert as to the clarification. Hey, remember the movie My Cousin Vinny? Remember when... when the prosecution brought that guy in that he was talking about how the cars were this and that and this and that, and then Vinny had to get his girlfriend to testify. Why? Because the prosecution presented, okay, some evidence, okay, and then the other side gets to refute the evidence once the expert gives their side of it. And she was able to show, okay, something contrary to what their expert showed. So... go ahead, Jamal.
Seemed like the judge could have took 5 minutes and asked his grandchildren how to zoom in works on their iPhones. I don't know, man.
His grandchildren aren't experts. And the jury, I know you're being facetious, but they're not experts, okay? And also, the jury would have to hear it as well. Also, I'm trying to point out here is that, because you brought this issue up, okay? Right. I'm just trying to show that reliability evidence that you're presenting, you have the burden. And if there's a question that's being brought up by the other side, otherwise, if that's not clarified, Zayla, you tell me, that could be the point of an appeal.
Correct. However, if it's something that's basic and common knowledge and they're just arguing it just to argue it, just to not have it be included, that's where I believe the prosecutors were frustrated with the circumstance. Because anybody and everybody that uses these devices know that you can only see so many pixels on the device. And so the recording is of a higher quality. I mean, these phones now are 5K and all this kind of stuff. And so pinching it and bringing it out is more often than not allowing you to be able to see pixels that are already there. And that's what his argument was. You shouldn't have to bring in a genius from the Apple store to be able to tell you that just because Apple uses artificial intelligence in regards to other aspects of using an iPhone device, that it's not necessarily what's happening here. But again, that's the defense bringing forward their objections, and they were able to win over the day with this judge.
They did their job.
Let's just be clear. A man's life hangs in the balance of, well, he's not going to get the death penalty because they don't have it, but you understand that this man's, you know, he's a defendant, okay? And because of the fact that he's a defendant in a murder trial, okay, every consideration has to be given to them, and the burden in these trials for criminal trials especially is that it has to be beyond a reasonable doubt. The judge gets to decide the rules of evidence. I was telling people the other day, Zayler, you could tell them also, with evidence, there's so many rules to the federal rules of evidence. That's the one question on the bar exam none of us ever, look, Zayler's laughing because that's true. That's the one that nobody wants to see on a bar exam, that and constitutional law.
So let me ask both of you, is the justice system set up to get the right answer?
All about what you can prove, Jamal. I hate to say it. You see that in the employment law stuff that we do.
The justice system is not about getting the right call.
I have to agree with you, Jamal. There's times where people, I have to agree with you. It's what you can prove and not prove. How many times do we go to mediation? The client didn't do anything wrong, but if they didn't do their documentation, okay, they could be 100% right. If they can't prove it, end of story.
Right.
But to give a different perspective on that, Jamal, if there was a if this objection was brought in front of a different judge, there could likely have been a different outcome.
I don't disagree with that.
Right.
It could have been, but that's
I'm just disappointed we can't. And for the most part, I've been on the side of he's a self defense. I think it's self defense. But that's key piece of evidence, whether that guy grabbed that man's gun or not.
One other point that I want to make real quick is that people got upset when the judge really admonished that prosecutor. And that was when the prosecutor brought up the fact that the guy was silent. Okay. The prosecution in front of the jury turned around and said that Mr. Rittenhouse, he was silent. That's what set the judge off against this guy initially. And Zayler, that is basic 101 law school first year. You don't bring up because it's a violation of his right. Because what are they told? They're admonished when they're arrested. You have a right to remain silent. Prosecutors cannot bring up the fact that this person elected to remain silent. because that's a showing of possibly that he's guilty. So it was within his constitutional rights for him not to have said anything. And that's what set the judge off initially. At any rate, hey, guys, we got 1 minute left. And we've got an important announcement that we told everybody we were going to make. Okay, everybody, this is an announcement. All right. After much debating about this for myself, actually, just to let you know, next week will be our last show. I've done almost 200 shows over the last 3 years. It's time to move on to bigger things. So now I'll be moving to TV as opposed to LA Talk. I'm just kidding about that. That's not true at all. At any rate, it's just time. You know, almost 200 shows. Having Zale and Jamal out has been great. Next week will be our last show. And I see with that, we're time out. We'll speak a little bit more about this next week. Guys, say goodbye to everybody this week.
Hey, have a happy good Sunday. Thanks for checking in on us.
Absolutely. Well, see you next
guys, week. Do us a favor. If you like what you heard, spread the word at least for one more week, okay? We're going to have a lot of fun next week with all of this. Take care, everybody. Until next week. Bye.
Bye.
You're listening to Listen Up with James Potts and co-hosts Jamal Potts and Zaylor Stout, only on LA Talk Radio.